What's the closest you ever got to being gay?
I blew six guys in college.
Six?
Well, you have to know if you like it. First one was weird. So I was like,
yeah,
let's do it five more times.
Right. It's like Goldilocks. Yeah, you got to go in each bed.
And by the sixth one, I was like, this is gross.
This is
like
crazy. This, yeah, I don't think I'm into this.
I don't like this at all.
100%.
We are back. And once again, the Lord has blessed us and Bert is sick. And thankfully, his replacement is so much more fun. It's great to have you, Greg Fitzsimmons. How you doing, buddy?
Fucking, I gotta say, the head looks good.
Look at these domes, dude.
Do you go all the way down on it, or you buzz
I do.
It?
No, I go all. I use the like ergonomic thing, and it goes all the way like skin.
Yeah,
like the electric one. It's really nice.
You do
it in the shower. You do it in the shower.
Dude,
very easy.
I need one of those.
Oh, fucking, I'll send you one.
Will you?
Yes, they're amazing.
Least you can do. I sent you a fucking ass wipe thing for your kid.
You did.
A heated ass wipe.
And I have, ever since that, it was so awesome. So when you have a kid, you don't know anything, your first kid.
Yeah.
Then an experienced parent tells you, you know, little things. And you're like, it warms up the wipes.
Yeah.
So a newborn doesn't feel a cold, fucking wet piece of paper on its ass. It's warm. Yeah. And I've gifted that to new parents all the time.
Yeah, instead of crying when you wipe them, they push back.
Yeah. Yeah, they're like, oh.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And you're like, I think my baby just came.
you feel like you're back in college on a dance floor at some dive bar.
Just grinding. Yeah. Yeah. It feels amazing. And then you want to use them. You're like, this is fucking nice.
I know. I want to be treated like a baby one day. Wake up. Just wake up and shit the bed.
Yeah.
Have somebody clean it up.
Let me tell you, it's coming. It's coming. Yeah. You just got to turn about 78, 80, something like that, and then shit the bed.
Yeah.
It's the whole fucking routine again.
Hey.
Yeah. I mean, I love being taken care of like that.
Yeah.
It's got to be amazing.
Yeah. Being cuddled and.
And every little thing, if the baby goes like, they're like, what is it?
Yeah.
What is it?
Yeah.
You could just do that and be like, I want a titty in my mouth or whatever, you know? So you can actually say it.
Right.
Yeah.
And then you're done sucking on the titty and they go, you seem like you need to burp. And then they bounce you up and down a little bit.
Yeah. Let your little burp out.
Yeah.
And then you just point at your dick. Now you could. Next.
You mean your mother would suck your dick?
Yes.
It seems like...
She's from South America.
Oh, right, yeah, right. Yeah, I forgot you guys have different traditions.
It's totally
there.
Different. Yeah. Yeah. That's just like a normal hello.
Isn't that a thing with like Orthodox kids? Doesn't like the rabbi...
Suck the kid's dick?
They perform one of the rituals and it involves sucking the kid's penis.
Sounds right. Nadav?
Can confirm it's to stop the bleeding after the circumcision.
Oh.
Well, wow. I'm not going to trade that then.
Let me tell you, they're different. You know what I mean? We're on a different team, you and I.
I'm glad I wasn't chosen.
Yeah. Yeah.
I'll sit on the bench for this game.
Yeah, you guys go ahead and do your thing. God. This is common. This is a routine thing.
Yeah, it's like I've never been to a circumcision, but the moel, who's the rabbi that circumcises, scientifically they say that there's something in the spit enzyme that stops the bleeding. I don't know if that's just like a come on, let us do it. But
that is a rough visual, dude.
Yeah,
I don't pull it up. I don't want to imagine that.
And there's a crowd watching. Is it part of the ceremony? Like everybody's standing around watching?
It's in front of everybody. Yeah.
Wow. Dude.
It's a lot of pressure.
Yeah. I once got a blowjob in the back of a van in the Bronx in front of my friends.
And, did you really?
Yeah. And I couldn't do it.
Really?
I couldn't do
it. They're just watching?
Yeah.
How many friends?
Well, it was a professional transaction.
Okay.
Yeah. So.
Were you able to get hard?
About halfway.
Yeah, but then it was too much, right?
Well, between the peppermint schnapps and guys in Grateful Dead jackets laughing. You know, everybody had a silk screen of the Doors. Everybody's chain smoking in the back of the windowless van. It felt a little rapey.
Hey, Greg, you going to come? Fitzy! And you're like, shit.
Everybody's hands are up waiting for the high five.
Oh,
I'm
my
like,
God.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, that's why, you know, it's great. Like the, you know, the porn people, it's like full cameras and
yeah.
people. And you're like, all right, that's a different, that's a skill set.
Have
right?
you been to a set?
No, I haven't been to a set. No, I've never
been
to a set.
I did it when I was, I hosted the porn awards
I remember
twice.
That. Yeah. yeah.
And so they said, you should probably go to a set and check it out, you uh-huh. know? And I was like, I just said to my wife, do you care? And she's like, I'm so fucking lucky. My wife is like, does not care. She's like,
really?
Do what you're going to do, you know, because she trusts me.
Yeah. Yeah.
And so I go downtown and it was like, it was so like shooting a TV show. It was yeah. so much more about the cameras
yeah.
and the lights. And I did not get aroused at all.
I believe it.
Yeah.
I believe it. I mean, I've said this on other podcasts where I don't know if this happened to you, but every time I've met a lot, you know, like there's this thing in like the comedy and adult world where it does kind of, you know what I mean? They come to the shows, like mm-hmm. if you're in LA and they're always really nice, but I can't like be aroused by anyone that I meet.
No.
I meet them and I'm like, oh, you know, just like you humanize them right away.
Yeah.
And then like you guys talk about your day and life. And then it's like, I don't want to watch this person do porn now.
Yeah.
It's like, it's only like when it's a distant fantasy removed like the humanity of a person
right.
where you can objectify them. But like, I don't get a thrill out of meeting them and then watching their stuff.
However,
yeah,
there was a girl who was a comedian in Boston when me and Rogan were coming up
uh-huh.
and she was smoking hot, like big, curvy, sexy
yeah.
Jewish girl.
Mm-hmm.
And then she was pretty. So she goes, you know, I'm moving out to Hollywood. And about 2 years later, we're like, I'm not gonna say her name, but remember so and so? And like, yeah, it's like somebody handed me a VHS tape, and she had been doing some like, remember when Cinemax was just like,
oh yeah, yeah,
like porn,
sure.
And she that was like, that's what she'd gotten into,
like the skit, like the it was like softcore, right?
It was like softcore, but yeah. I mean like. Sex scenes that went on for like 4 minutes.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And she was in it. And I mean, that, I can't tell you, it's the most aroused I've ever been.
Really, yeah.
Because I knew her.
Yeah, but you're also, that's also kind of a reverse of what I'm talking about, right? In a way, because what I'm talking about is like the porn performer, you've seen them in porn, then you meet them.
Then you
and
meet
like
them.
The fantasy yeah. is like, it's
right.
over.
Right.
This is like someone from your real life that gets into a fantasy thing.
Yeah.
Totally different,
right.
I think, you
right.
know? Did you respect her or no? Like you like.
I felt sad that she'd gone to Hollywood and I don't think that was her vision of how things were going to play out.
Yeah, yeah.
So it was like, I knew that she wasn't going to be able to do stand up in Boston again.
Yeah.
You know, that she once you go there, I don't know how you come back from that. I mean, I guess I think Debbie Harry did porn before uh-huh. before Blondie took off.
Really?
Yeah.
Real porn?
Well, she definitely did nude photos, but I heard that there was also a porn that she did a porn that was going. I shouldn't say that. Allegedly. Allegedly.
Did I tell you when I first got I almost did a Skinamax show. So
what?
Yeah. So I'm 22. This is peak Tom. I'm like 185. I weigh like 30 pounds less than I do now.
Wow.
And I'm a kid. I'm 22 years old.
Yeah.
Clean shaven. Uh-huh. I have hair.
Full head of hair.
And I go in and the audition is like FBI agent. And this is like non-union stuff,
yeah.
right? And I'm like, just like, you know, I got a, yeah, I'm like this guy in the middle, you know? Like
mm-hmm.
So I go in there. And the guy, you know, okay, I do the read with him. And he's like, how do you feel about being nude? And I was like, oh, I want the non-nude part. And he was like, you sure? And I go, yeah. He goes, and he pulls up a picture of this beautiful blonde woman naked. And he goes, you'll get to fuck her. And I go...
He had orchestrated this interview.
Yeah, and I was like, I go, he goes, well, you know, pretend fuck her, but you guys will be naked and shoot the scene, and you sure you don't want to do that? I go, I mean, I don't think I can, man. I think I got to do the clothed part.
Yeah.
And he was just like, look at her again. And I was like, fuck.
Wow, good restraint.
Like, I know. Well, I just kept thinking about, like, honestly, at that age, just parents. You know, I just left college.
Yeah.
I remember calling my dad and telling him, and I was like, but I told them I would only do the clothed part, but it would be like a softcore scene. And he's like, that's okay. He's like, well, you know, they gotta get their start somewhere. That's fine. I was like, all right, well, I go, I'm just not, I just, you know, I won't be pretend fucking some chick on Cinemax.
Yeah.
But yeah, it was like offered. Yeah.
When I was in acting school, I went to acting school for 2 years in New York, and it was very methody.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And so I was supposed to do this scene with this girl from this play called The Dreamer Examines His Pillow. And it was like a rape scene.
Oof.
I was supposed to rape her. And so we did the scene in class, and the teacher, who was this gay guy with a handlebar mustache, and he had like button fly jeans, and he always left the top two buttons open.
Oh my God.
And they were super tight, and you could see his bulge, and he was very flamboyant. He was fucking riot. Richard Pinter, best acting teacher in New York. And he goes, stop, stop. This is fucking bullshit. Stop. You're not raping her. And he goes, you guys need to work this scene out. So he gave us the keys to the studio, and he goes, come in here when we're not around, and you guys need to go deep into this scene. So, and this girl was smoking hot. She was this Puerto Rican girl from Brooklyn. And so we played out the scene like, you know, like just, it was so hard to cross that line.
Yeah.
But like he wanted me to tear her clothes off and like dry hump. And it was dark.
Yeah.
And
how fucking hard did you get?
I got super hard. I mean, you're hard right now.
I
can't believe it.
I'm so excited by your story.
Oh my God. To sanction it, to say go for it, it's very hard emotionally and psychologically and spiritually to, and that's why I'm not an actor to this day, I wasn't able to do it.
Yeah, that's a rough direction to get.
Yeah.
And so she was good with you working through that scene.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I remember I did an acting class out here also with Janet Alhanti. She was phenomenal.
Out here in Austin?
Sorry. And I always think I'm in LA.
Yeah.
In LA. And there was like celebrity pop-ins all the time. And at the time, this actress, I think her name was Brooke Burns. I think
Brooke Burns.
Was she dating Bruce Willis or something like that at the time?
Oh, yeah. She was a Baywatch girl.
Yes. And we had a scene together.
Damn.
Yeah. We had a scene together in front of the class, and I was supposed to also get aggressive with her.
Uh-huh.
And I asked her to slap me. And she was like, no, I'm not going to. I don't want to do that. I go, I want you to do it. And I go, I think it would help, you know? And she's like, really? And she was like, I don't know. I was like, all right. And then we do the scene, and she slapped me. Like, she slapped the shit out of me.
Yeah.
And I was like, I fucking like, and she was like, oh. And then the scene ends, and I go, that was great. That was great. I loved it.
Did you have it on tape?
No, no, but it's plays in here all the time.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I used to take I took this other class with Greg Giraldo in New York.
Fucking Greg.
He was the best. And the teacher, her name was Sally Johnson. She was a good teacher, but she was cross-eyed. And so like you do the scene, and then you and your partner would be standing there, and she would be like, and you were particularly good. I like the choices you made. And you're sitting there going like, me
or? How great was Greg? Because a lot of people, you know, it's one of those things now too, where we were just talking about how, you know, in this like business and entertainment, there's a time frame. You can be huge for 50 years. Like, George Carlin.
Yeah.
And I want to say he died in 07, I think.
Okay.
Right? Which I was like, that seems like so long ago now.
Yeah.
And I feel like you could go up to like a 30-year-old today, oh, 08, and they'd be like, oh, I know that name. And you're like, damn, you already don't know like who that is?
Right.
Right? And like everybody who, I'd met Giraldo, I think, once, but I'm saying like I was watching all his stuff all the time.
Yeah.
And like how talented that guy is. But you got that, you were like friends. You
Yeah, we started together. I mean, that was like my sort of class in New York of coming up was like me, Geraldo, Todd Barry, Jim Gaffigan. Like we were all kind of, Kevin Brennan. We all came in at the same time. Silverman.
He was so good.
And he was just the guy that I immediately was like, oh, this guy's gonna. Well, he also had the work ethic. Like he fucking wrote. He wrote smart, incisive. Like you remember the altercation he had with Dennis Leary on Tough Crowd?
Oh my God. Oh my God.
And where Dennis tried to call him on the fact that he worked hard and wrote material for the show.
It was unbelievable.
And what was great about it was it showed that not only that Greg was doing the work and he was prepared, which always showed, but that he then went off script and he just went after Leary. And Leary, who's, you know, a scrapper. He's a street fighter type comic.
Yeah.
And Geraldo took him down. Yeah.
Yeah. And it also like it highlighted in that moment the not just the work ethic he had, but that somebody was the other guy who was a big name and successful was like, I'm just being myself up here. I'm not preparing stuff.
Yeah.
And I feel like that's enough. And it's the message there is like, no, you should still keep preparing.
Right.
Even if everybody knows who you are.
Right.
Because otherwise you're left in this moment.
Yeah.
Where you're like, oh shit.
Yeah.
I just got embarrassed.
Yeah.
It's a fucking powerful moment. Like you feel it. That's like I had a visceral reaction where you don't want to be Leary in that moment.
He looked naked.
Yes.
He was exposed.
Totally exposed.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's a really incredible moment.
Yeah.
Sorry that I fucking try or something like that.
Yeah. Like, right. Oh my God. But it's like that also. Like sometimes I'll be in New York and like the comics in New York just, they grind a lot harder than the LA comics.
Mm-hmm.
And like I'll go into the Comedy Cellar and it'll be like, you'll see Sam Morrell and Mark Norman and they get up on stage and they're doing shit. And I see them, you know, pretty frequently. I mean, you see their social media.
Yeah.
New shit, like brand new shit, tearing it up. And you just realize, like, I remember being that hungry and being that driven and working that hard. Mm-hmm. And I, you know, I still work hard. Like, I still am always doing new stuff, but not like that.
Not that, yeah. I think that also is the natural path, right? Where you're gonna really, really grind. And that's generally not sustainable for 30, 40 years.
Right.
I mean, you still work hard and you're always doing new material and you're doing the road, which is like kind of, that is the job.
Yeah.
But yeah, when you're really trying to, you know, make a name for yourself and get people to recognize you and get gigs and you feel like that audience is first coming to you and you're like, oh, I got to deliver.
Yeah.
You know, you can't manufacture that.
I can remember being on the road and I would get up Friday morning after my Thursday night show, and I would sit there with my tape recorder with a notebook, and I would go through word for word.
No.
And it's Friday night, if I did two shows, then the next on Saturday, I'd listen to both hours word for word, and I would write down word changes, tags, you know, crowd work that went well. I mean, I was like,
it shows,
I was
though.
Obsessed.
It shows. It still shows. You always have new stuff.
Oh,
always.
Thanks, man.
Yeah, it's like, I mean, you're one of my favorite comics to watch because you always, like, there's people who say they're doing new stuff and you're like, I've seen this for 15 years. And then you really, like, you'll talk about the trip you just got back from and you always have insightful, smart, funny shit and you always go for it. Like, you go for jokes.
Oh, thanks,
you
know? Man.
I love it. I love watching you just
thanks.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, going for the joke really is something that is almost frowned upon now.
Of course.
People don't go for the joke.
No. You go for the joke, dude. I think that is a school of comedians that are probably from your class through like my class. And then it kind of changed.
Yeah.
Like I'm at the end of like go for the joke.
Right.
Feels like it sometimes.
Right.
And then things now are, but like, that's why, you know, I love from that class too, is like those huge, like Chris Rock and Seinfeld and like those huge guys, they all are like, yeah, go for the joke.
Yeah.
Like go for the, say whatever it is. Is it a funny joke? Are you going for it?
Yeah.
That's what they respect.
Yeah.
That's always how I liked it too, is like, yeah, dude, that's a fucking, he went for it.
Yeah.
That's what I want to see.
And I think that's kind of why roasting came back, because it's so, it's going for the joke. It's like, it was kind of like people forgot that comedy could be that pure and that good, where you could really just think, craft, hone, and then come in with just concentrated bam, bam, bam.
One of my favorite messages to get after a show that I do is, you'll see, you know, people usually are very like, that was, you know, they had a great time. And then sometimes you'll see people go like, I got really uncomfortable at these things. And I'm like, great.
Yeah.
That means I still am doing it right, at least to some degree.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
when they were like, that part, I didn't like that. I'm like, oh, good.
Well, I think it's like surfing. I mean, you can go out and you can ride the whitewash on a fucking boogie board and have a fun day.
Sure.
But like, if you really want to feel it, you got to go out where the waves are.
Yes.
You got to find that topic, whether it's abortion or whether it's race or whatever. You got to find that spot that makes you uncomfortable and then bring that on stage. Like, I've always felt like that's where comedy should, for me, it started with, what am I? And I think the watershed moment for me was when I went on Howard Stern. I said, like, what is something I would not even tell my best friend, and then bring it on stage?
Yeah.
So I go on Howard Stern and I told this story about how when I was in college, like, I was really into Iggy Pop and David Bowie and, you know, the Stones. And there was a lot of like, bisexuality that was happening.
Yeah.
And I was like, you know, and I'd had sex with a lot of different women and configurations of women. And I was like, what would it be like being with a guy, you know? I should try it. I was a drunk. I was doing drugs. I was like, I'd do anything.
Sure.
So I was like, I'm going to do it. I'm going to blow a guy, you know? and I didn't know who, because what was weird was like, I was never attracted to guys. Like, I had no draw whatsoever.
Right.
But at the same time, I was like, I'm not going to know unless I do it.
Yeah.
And so I told this story on Stern, and I had literally never, I had told my wife and two other people at dinner the week before. And my wife was angry at me that I had never told her this.
Really?
And that I shared it in front of another couple in front of her. That's how fucking bad this. So I'm in college, and I'm walking home, and I lived in the Fenway, which is in Boston. Every major city, I don't know if Austin has this, but every major city has a small wooded area downtown that was planted and grown for anonymous gay sex. New York City has the Brambles, and Boston has the Fenway.
Sure.
It's behind Fenway Park. And I happen to live across the street from the Brambles. So I come home one night, it's like 4 a.m, I'm stumbling drunk, and I'm like, I'm going to do it. And I went straight into the woods, and it was like a fall night. It was like spooky. There was like leaves dangling and I see shadows shifting in the woods. And I was like, I didn't know what the protocol was. I don't know how it works. So I just walk in, and all of a sudden this guy just jumps up from behind a tree, like with his hands on his hips, like the gay elf, like, I'm the guy.
Yeah.
This is the dick. And I was like, all right, let's do it. And so he's standing there, and he unzips his fly, and he pulls out his dick. And I was like looking at it like, all right, I guess this is it. And then he reaches in with his hand and he pulls his balls out. But he's still got his pants buttoned. So he's got balls and shafts sticking out of a fly, all being pushed together.
Yeah.
Like it looked like a guy with hairy shoulders and a bald head. And so I just looked at it and I was like, nope.
No
interest. That doesn't do it for me. And so then I got scared because I was in the woods in the middle of the night with a guy with his dick out.
Yeah.
And so I pushed him and he fell down and then he got up and he ran off into the woods with his dick flopping up and down. And I just stumbled out of the woods like, oh, I
Jesus
guess I'm
Christ.
Not gay.
Dude, you got as close as someone can get to trying it.
As close. Yeah. I was like a foot away from this dude.
Holy shit.
Yeah.
Man.
Yeah.
Big balls?
Big balls. Well, they were big. He was shrugging. I mean, they were being pushed up.
Oh, right, by the fly.
Yeah. Yeah, it was like a push-up bra situation.
Yeah. Wow. That's
What's the closest you ever got to being gay?
I blew 6 guys in college.
6?
Well, you have to know if you like it. You know? First one was weird. So I was like, let's do it 5 more times.
Right. It's like Goldilocks. You got to go in each bed.
And by the 6th one, I was like, this is gross.
This is
like
crazy.
This. Yeah,
I don't think I'm into this.
I don't like this at all.
Meanwhile, no. The seventh guy is like, fuck,
man. I was like, you know, I was talking about the gayest thing I've ever done. I think it wasn't a sexual act. It was enjoying being hit on and like accepting it and not being like, oh, thanks, man. And like, all right, appreciate it. It was like just, and it was actually, I think it was also in Boston.
Yeah.
Because I was working in Boston right after college at a real estate place. We would go out and I remember being like hit on and just being like, this feels good.
Yeah.
Like, just like taking it in, you know?
Did the guy buy you a drink?
Yeah. He bought me a drink and, you know, and I just like, I guess I accepted it. I just was like, it was the attention. It was like, it was flattering attention.
Right.
And it was also the type of attention that like, you know, pretty rare for a woman to come on to you like that. And he wasn't like, you know, being super, but I mean, he was just like, staring and like, you know, compliment. And I think I just like was like, yeah, feels good.
Yeah.
I just took it, you know.
Yeah.
And then I walked away. I was like, that was pretty gay.
Yeah.
Like it was like a man like really coming on to me, you know.
Have you ever watched gay porn?
No, I mean, well, we have a friend of the show who has sent us clips of some of his work, but I haven't.
Oh,
like,
really?
Yeah, yeah. I know, you know, there's a lot of women that go, they love watching gay porn.
No shit.
Yeah. There's a nut, like a, it's a thing where some women go like, you know, great bodies and I'm like, and they don't care, I guess, that there's not a woman there.
Right.
But they enjoy it.
Yeah.
But I haven't like sat around and been like, I'm gonna watch some gay porn.
Yeah.
I've had a lot of friends send me links to, trans porn.
Trans porn.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I have a friend who was like, I love this stuff. And I go, that's cool. I'm not into it. And he goes, check this one out. And I go, yeah, but I'm not into it. And he's like, you got to watch it. And I'm like, all right. And then he's like, wasn't that hot? I go, no, not to me. They're like, what are you doing?
Was it breasts and a penis?
Yeah. Yeah. Breasts and a penis. And of course now, I'm not saying that it didn't happen before, but even like more so now, I think there are, you can be completely fooled before that shot. Where like face is like stunning, breasts, body, you're like, wow. And then you're like, whoa.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, there's the whole brand of like the Thai lady boys.
Yes.
And they are gorgeous.
Gorgeous. Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, that's the thing is like, if you're in that situation, right? Where like, let's say you were like at a bar and you get to the room and then you're all fired up and then you drop your pants and then she drops her pants and you're like, oh shit.
I'd crying
like,
game.
You're like, just you suck it first, you know? And then I'll be like, I'm too tired to do yours.
Yes. Yeah, exactly.
I would.
You go first.
I'm so tired. You did such a good job. I can't.
You suck me dry.
Yeah, I'm sorry.
Wow.
All right.
Yeah. Or you do a 69, but it's like the laziest 69. It's
just, she's like, put it in your mouth.
And yeah. Yeah. The six is doing a lot of sucking and playing with the balls, and the nine is just rolling his head back. Yeah.
God, yeah. All right, I'm not against it. I'd try it.
Yeah.
Yeah. I was in, I remember we were in Macau, and we did a show.
Where's Macau?
China.
Oh.
And it's like their Vegas.
Uh-huh.
It's fucking unbelievable. I don't know if you could do an aerial shot of Macau. The number of casinos, I believe they told us it was seven times the amount of Vegas. Seven
Whoa.
Times. And you're like, what?
No
and
kidding.
It's the money laundering capital of the world.
Damn.
It's the only place that China allows exchange of currency and for you to leave with other currency.
No
So like
kidding.
If you go, if you're in Beijing and you're like, I want to trade $100,000 and they're like, that shit is staying. But if you go to Macau, you can do it.
So wow.
It's a huge like crime, you know, mafia hang too. But I mean, that is, it's just like,
damn,
it's nuts, dude.
And it's, so it's a financial city or is it and just a gambling city?
Well, there's finance, but like huge, like gambling capital of the world.
Wow.
And the casinos are, you know, the Asian community loves casinos and gambling.
Like
all the Las Vegas casinos cater to the Asian community. People don't even know that. If you look into the design, color pattern, everything is because Asians like it.
Like eights are lucky. So like the eighth floor has
colors. And then there's that famous MGM Grand story where they used to have the entrance used to be the lion's mouth, and the Asians were like, mm-mm, we don't want to walk into the lion's mouth. And they were like, take that shit down.
Really?
And it was like fucking $100,000. Yeah, yeah. And they're like, nope.
Yeah.
Because you can't keep, like, do anything that would, you know, keep Asians out of your casino. But we were there. We did a show. And they were like, oh, you don't like this? No problem. The bars were just full of, you know, lady boys and stuff. And,
really?
And you could not, like, you couldn't tell, dude.
Yeah.
We're all, they're super aggressive. That's the only thing they tell you. Like, yeah, women aren't like this.
Yeah,
you
know,
bio women aren't going to be this aggressive.
Yeah.
But like face, body, you had no idea.
Right. You
know, not until we fucked them. That's when we could tell.
It's like, this clit is huge.
Jesus Christ.
Yeah, it's amazing how much the Asians have control over the U.S. in terms of like films that come out. They go through scripts.
Mm-hmm.
The Chinese movie industry has a say in big blockbuster movies.
They come out there. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Otherwise, they're like, they didn't release that new Top Gun there.
Oh, is that right?
Yeah. And it still is like a humongous box office smash. But they had some, I don't know if it was like a flag or something that China was like, uh-uh. And they were like, well, we're not taking it. All right, then it won't play here. That's the biggest market in the world.
Wow. Talk about gay porn. Did you see that movie?
No. I didn't see
Top
the new
Gun?
One. I still haven't seen it.
Did you see the first one?
Yeah, of course.
Dude, when they're looking at each other and Val Kilmer like chomps his teeth at Tom Cruise.
And everyone's shirtless and sweaty.
They're playing volleyball and like close-ups of them rolling in the sand.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like, dudes never. When do you see dudes doing that ever?
You know what else is funny about that movie was, like, I remember, you know, there's always, like, the famous Star Wars scroll where they're like, the Top Gun program was developed in 1985 for the most elite pilots. And, like, if you watch, like, a Ken Burns thing or something on PBS, like, it scrolls really fast. You can barely read it. Top Gun, they left it up for, like, 4 minutes, like three sentences. That's the audience.
That is the audience, yeah. Top Gun came out in 1985. Yeah. That's pretty good stuff. Bunch of dummies watching that thing, yeah.
Yeah.
That's funny. That's like, that actually is so rare that you have probably a movie that appeals to whatever, gay fans and women wanting to see nothing comes out like that.
Right.
Really.
Right.
Magic Mike.
Yeah.
You know, most.
Well, there's a new one. Billy Eichner has a new movie out and I'm kind of curious to see how it does because it's the first like big budget mainstream gay movie.
Really?
About gay romance. It's about gay relationships and
stuff.
And I saw it and I heard about it from Judd because Judd produced it. And then, I saw the trailer, and it doesn't shy away from, like, this is going to be about gay dudes making out and dancing and hitting on each other. And
it's called Bros?
Yeah.
That's funny.
Yeah.
And it's Billy is the star of it?
Yes.
Okay.
And cool.
Is it out now?
I think so. I think it's out this week.
Oh, wow.
This is a lot about gay on this podcast today, huh?
So what? We're just bros, dude. So
we're
what?
Just, right.
We're just broing down. Can't talk about dudes? What's up? You know, you told me one time that you love nothing more than big black tits, and that's why I put out this Aretha Franklin album for you today.
Oh, that's so nice.
Yeah, yeah.
Did I tell you that?
Yeah. So I switched it up for you. Now we're on to black tits. Yeah, you do love them, right?
I do love black tits. Yeah.
Yeah.
As long as they're big, I guess I don't really care what color they are.
Right. But look at those.
Look at those
Holy
things.
Shit.
Whoa.
There's a certain type of fat black woman that, like, you don't see other women looking like.
Yeah.
Like, you know what I mean? Like, it looks like she's got, like, people underneath that dress.
Yeah.
And I guess also where you see them still being confident. That's the thing is like a white fat lady knows to shuffle and look at the ground.
Yeah.
You know? And then a big fat black lady is like, I'm sexy.
That's right.
And you're like, Jesus
That's right.
Christ. Yeah. Yeah.
You know Yamanika Saunders?
Yeah.
Yeah. She's like that. She's like a sexy black woman with a big body. And yeah. she puts her Instagram feed as like her working out in some spandex and stuff.
Yeah.
And she, yeah, she makes it work.
Yeah.
But she's lost a lot. She's like been showing this workout program that she's been on.
That's great.
Dude, she's funny as shit.
Really?
Yeah, she's super funny. Have you ever dated a black woman?
I hooked up with one in college.
Oh.
Yeah.
Was that in the book?
No.
Yeah.
They made me take it out.
Brand, Tom, brand.
No, she was really beautiful.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It was just one time?
Yeah, we like would flirt a lot through like a couple years of college, and then it was senior week where we went to this. And dude, she we're staying at this place in Myrtle Beach. There's like a bunch, like 25 of us seniors.
Yeah.
And I walk by the pool and she shoves me in one day, right? Like that's her playing. And I was like, all right. So in my mind, I'm like, I'm gonna get her back.
Yeah.
Well, I go to shove her. And she grabs me as I'm shoving her. So I go in with her and she can't swim.
Oh.
And she is full panic. But her panic is so picture a 10.
Yeah.
That she's like drowning me.
Oh shit.
Yeah. Like so I had to actually shove her off, right? And look like I was trying to kill her.
Yeah.
And then like get air.
Yeah.
And then and she was like frantically, and I was like, she was like, why'd you do that? I'm like, what do you mean, why'd I do that? You shoved me in the pool. I shoved you in the pool. Like,
wow.
Yeah. So
and that led to sex?
Yeah. She was like, dude, she was like really wanting to hook up.
Yeah.
And then they were like telling me that she's in my room. I was like, what? Really?
Mm.
She was in the shower.
In the shower in your room?
Mm-hmm.
She wasn't afraid of drowning?
Yeah.
Dude, I tell you what happened at the beach? I was in Venice Beach last weekend, and it's me and my wife and a couple friends. Beautiful day. I go out riding some waves, and then all of a sudden the waves just, you know how sometimes they just come up out of nowhere and you're like, holy shit.
Yeah.
I'm like, and the kind of waves where like it tumbles you and you spin. And then as you come up, there's another one. And as you're trying to swim out, the undertow is pulling you back out into the wave.
Yeah, terrifying.
Yeah, it's like terrifying. And I start to panic a little bit. And then I hear from behind me, help. And I turn around and there's this dude and he's got on swim goggles and he's slapping the water and he's going down and I'm like, fuck, I wish I didn't turn around because now I gotta do it. And meanwhile, like I when I was a teenager, I took the junior lifeguard training program.
Uh-huh.
And me and my friends used to get high every morning before the class. Parents made us take it. We get high before the class, totally fucked around. And so I failed the written part of the test.
Mm-hmm.
And then I failed the physical part of the test as well.
Okay,
so
okay.
I failed it.
Yeah.
And so, but I learned enough so that
sure.
I knew like exactly what you said. I knew that if I approached him head on, he was going to take me down.
Yeah.
So I said to him, I go, you got to turn around for me. I go, turn around. And I get him in a cross chest carry. I said, just lean back and relax. And I start doing the side stroke. And then a wave comes, big fucking wave. And I'm like, dude, hold your breath. We're going to go under. Just relax. We go under, tumbled. I look for him, grab him again. Side stroke, and this goes on. 2 minutes doesn't sound like a long period of time.
And that it is. Yeah.
We got hit by like five waves, and I kept stroking, and I was making a little bit of progress each time. And then and my muscles, there was no oxygen left. It was pure exhaustion.
Yeah.
And I finally got to the part of the beach where like my feet could touch the ground. And so now I can't even swim. And so I'm leaning into him and I'm pushing him out of the water. And the waves are coming. All of a sudden, the lifeguard boat pulls up and some young tan stud dives out of the water, knocks me out of the way, grabs my guy.
Yeah.
And pulls him in. And everybody on the beach is clapping away.
You're like,
giving them hand jobs, and I'm out there, and I get sucked back into the wave.
No.
And now I'm like flailing. I'm like, hey, what the fuck? What about me? And so, like, I finally, like, pulled my way out, and I, like, walk back. You know, walking against that undercurrent sometimes can be exhausting. I had nothing left, and I see the guy on the beach, and he gets up, and he gives me this big hug, and his goggles are, like, filled with water.
Yeah.
It's just, like, a mess. And he's like, you saved my life, man. And I was like, yeah, thanks.
Yeah. How old was he?
He was, like, late 30s, black guy, shaved head. Swim goggles is not a good sign in the ocean.
No.
That's a sign of an amateur. That's a real really amateur. Understand. Yeah.
In shape?
Like, in shape, but he had a belly.
Yeah. But he was like, wow, he was really like panicking and...
He was done. I mean, when I pulled him, he wasn't struggling. He wasn't helping. He was just dead weight.
Jesus.
Yeah.
I got caught. Did you tell him you like big black tits?
He's like, why are you giving me mouth to mouth? I've been out of the water for 5 minutes now.
I got caught in that undercurrent. So it was in Palm Beach. Dude, I'm just like in the shallow part. And I used to go out a little more. I'm like, I'm gonna enjoy this ocean. You know, just like floating, swimming. And there's like decent waves. And I float out a little bit. And the waves are decent size. So I'm like, I'm gonna start going back. And I start swimming and the current is strong. So I'm like, damn. And it's a little deep. So I swim a little more. And when I finally am able to touch the ground, I try to walk and the current's too strong. So it pushes me back. So I know, like, don't try to fight it too hard. So I let it push me back. And it takes me back like 10 feet. And I start to swim again. And it's like wave, undercurrent. And I go back again. So now I'm like 20 feet further back than I was. And I try to walk. And I'm just like, I'm not getting anywhere.
Yeah.
And I'm starting to actually feel that I'm panicking a little bit.
Yeah.
And I was like, holy shit. Because like I feel comfortable in the water, you know, I'm not like a amateur in swimming. I used to swim. I mean, I don't feel like out of sort. Like, oh my God, what do I do here? But that panic started to rise, and I kept letting it push me. So now I let it like kind of push me to the right as opposed to back, and it's still the current.
Yeah,
it's still. And at one point, I'm like, a lifeguard is sitting in the, you know, in his tower.
Yeah.
And he gets down and he looks and he goes like, you okay? And I took a second and I was walking and I was trying to, and I finally got footing where I was able to get a little momentum. So I got a few, and I went like this. And then when I came up, I was like breathing hard. And I was like, dude, I was about like half a second from asking you to come in.
Yeah.
And he was like, yeah, it looked like it.
Yeah.
And he's like, yeah, this is a big undercurrent here.
Right.
It's wide. I mean, it was like 100 yards wide.
Yeah.
And it was taken about, it was fucking terrifying.
Well, once you panic, then your breathing becomes shorter.
Mm-hmm.
You're not stroking as well. You're taking little strokes.
Mm-hmm.
And they say that the thing to do in that kind of, well, first of all, you look for the waves that are crashing into each other, because that's where the, what do they call that? A rip current.
Yeah.
Which means the waves are coming at each other and then they're sucking straight out.
Yeah.
And if you're in that, the best thing to do is actually swim out to sea.
Swim out.
Yeah, swim out and then go around the rip current.
Yeah, I think I could conceive of that, but I wasn't going as far as I needed to go to get out of that current.
Yeah.
Right?
Right.
And I also, I had never felt that level of panic in the, like, I'd always thought of it as fine, you know.
Yeah.
I wasn't nervous or anything. And that day I was fully panicked.
Yeah. No, it's traumatic. It's, the ocean's no joke, man. The ocean is a strong bitch.
Yeah.
And I went back to the ocean a couple days ago. Went back with my wife and I went in the water and the waves were kind of big and like I found myself not able to go out. I was like, I got some PTSD.
Oh, for sure.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's going to take me a while to get back in the water again.
When you helped that guy, which beach were you at?
Venice Beach.
You were in Venice Beach?
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. So he was probably homeless.
Probably. Why'd you save him? That's who you want to drown.
I could have been part of the solution.
Yeah.
At least he was clean.
Yeah. You know? Well, sure. Yeah. Finally, for once in his life. Yeah.
Yeah. But are you a swimmer?
No, I mean, like, you know, so I swam, I was a swim team kid when I'm like 7, 8, 9 years old. So I was, I mean, in pools, very comfortable in the pool, you know, like I just, it was part of routine.
Yeah.
Just swimming all the time. I mean, I didn't stay on the swim team as I got older, but always swam and was very comfortable in the water. I mean, they, you know, we got the training, we were swimming all the time. And then the ocean, I always enjoyed. I mean, I didn't, you know, I wasn't like, like obsessed with the ocean. I didn't surf or anything, but again, like it's just, I wasn't somebody who was like, I don't want to go in the water. You know, it just felt normal to me.
Right.
So, but I mean, I've snorkeled, you know, I didn't get scuba certified or anything, but you know, snorkeling was a blast. I did it, I did it in multiple places.
Yeah.
And always enjoyed it. I never quite felt that level of panic as that.
Have you taught the kids to swim?
Yeah. So the oldest is like really good now. And the little dude is, he's in lessons now. Like he's doing them every week. So he'll probably be good to go, I think, in a few more months.
The sooner you can teach your kids to swim, the better.
Because
you never know when they're going to end up in the pool unattended or something.
Yeah, oh, it's
terrifying. It's scary.
Yeah, yeah. No, he's little guy's like getting pretty good at it. So
yeah.
I think he'll be there soon enough.
Right. Yeah. And to shoot a gun at this age is key.
Key, yeah. 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 Line up some homeless and let her rip.
I was just, Rogan took me to the range. I'd never been to a range before.
In L.A. or
in
here?
L.A. He was out.
To Taryn?
When we saw you at that birthday party, the next day he took me out to a range. Is
that Taryn Tactical?
The guy teaches like Wick, John
Taryn.
Wick and all
that's
that.
Him right there. Yeah, Taryn Butler.
Yeah, and his assistants, the Ukrainian women.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Who were wearing way less than they're wearing right there.
And the thing is, you go, you first see them, you're like, come on. And then they're all like precision shooters. Like
crazy.
Yeah.
Not just good shots, but like they move from target to target. They're like running around shooting. And it was so much fun. It was,
it's a blast, dude.
Yeah.
It is so fun. They do he does an amazing job there. And honestly, you see those women and you're like, for real? And then they're training you and you see like how good they are. Like some of them are competitive world-class shooters.
Right.
Yeah. And he is other fucking level.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's a fun, what's her name? Tatiana, I think. Yeah. She's Ukrainian.
Yes. Yeah. She was there.
Yeah.
And I shot this. It was a AK-47 body, but it had like a shotgun on it.
Mm-hmm.
So you could go like boom, 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 boom.
Yeah, he's got all the toys.
Crazy.
He's got all the toys, dude.
Yeah.
It is. It's the most fun.
Yeah.
And then he sets up like courses. That's, dude, you know what I did there one time? They're like, so they give you, if you're standing around, you know, you'll holster your gun and they'll give you like a plastic gun.
Yeah.
To just get used to the motion. So he'll be like, you know, go through like, this is how you're going to do it. You're going to go to this target, then you're going to move here, then you want to move here. And then it's like making your footwork, practice your footwork to go from here to here. You don't want to take too many steps and delay through it. So they're like, just practice while we set up. And I was doing that and I put the plastic gun down and I grabbed my real gun and they're like, yeah, just go through. And I just go, boom. And I was like, and they're like,
no,
like,
shit.
Yeah, it was like during a practice. No one was out there.
Yeah.
But like I was, it scared me so much that I was like, I'm done. I don't want to do this anymore.
Really?
Like, for the day, I was
for
like,
the day.
I was like, I'm done. And they're like, no. And then they encouraged me to come back. But I felt so guilty and embarrassed and everything that I had done that. Yeah. It was terrifying.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
I was like, fuck. You feel humiliated by it, you know? But it's a blast, dude. He's really like a teacher is what it is, you know?
Yeah.
And he makes you, the reason the studios send their actors there is like, you realize that most people, if they're not experienced, they have the wrong idea of like how guns are held.
Right.
So you look goofy as shit. And if you're going to be in a movie where you're a marksman, he's like, no one's going to believe it.
Yeah.
Who knows?
Yeah.
You know, he's like people holding their guns like this.
Oh,
like
I hate the sideways shot.
The sideways
shot.
Or their thumbs in the wrong place. He's like, that's not how you hold a gun.
But I didn't realize how difficult. Like, I got it after a while, but I found the handgun really hard to aim. And I realized, like, all those movies where people are not experienced with guns and they're pulling it out and they're shooting multiple. It's like, no, it
fantasy.
Does not work like
doesn't
that.
Doesn't work like that.
Yeah.
No, then all the best shooters. It's like anything else. Everybody who shoots really well shoots all the time.
Yeah.
Like, there's no such thing as like, I'm precision 95% and I just pick it up once in a while.
No, yeah.
Those, but the people who are great at it are like him.
Yeah.
They're pulling it out every day.
Right.
Yeah. And the speed with which he does, oh my God, dude. Like, we would do these set up targets and, you know, first time I get it 9 seconds and then, I don't know, after all these runs, I'm able to trim off a couple of seconds. He's like, that's really fucking good. I go, I want to see you do it.
Yeah.
Dude. It's like 2 seconds. You just did all those in 2 seconds. Right. He's like, well, you know, I'm kind of out of practice. I'm like,
yeah,
wow. It's like
he's won like national championships multiple times.
Yes. Yeah. He's a world class guy.
Yeah.
It's like you go and, you know, you see like a professional golfer. You really realize what it is to shoot like a 62 and you're like, oh, okay.
Right.
Like this is not, I'm not going to do this.
Yeah. Yeah. Do you golf?
I used to do it more. I haven't done it now in years. It's like I fantasize about the whole environment of it.
Yeah.
Like going out there with friends and having like a you know, a chill afternoon.
Yeah.
But I haven't done it in a long time.
Yeah. I got a cousin who he turned pro like 4 or 5 years ago. This kid named Denny McCarthy came in like 6th place in the U.S. Open this year.
Wow.
He's really good. He's like, they say he's like one of the best putters on the tour.
Really?
Yeah.
I've been doing the opposite of golf. I've been going to the racetrack and driving a race car. And
oh, so, no shit.
Yeah, Bert got me a race car. So
what do you mean he got you a race car?
He bought me a race car for my birthday.
No.
Yeah. Yeah. So I...
Dude, I was going to ask you to reimburse me for the Uber ride over here.
Yeah. There it is right there.
The money you guys are throwing around. What kind of car is it?
It's a spec E46. It's like basically a BMW 330i that's been like stripped down.
No shit.
Yeah. Well, I took it to Harris Hill and spent 4 hours there. That was my golfing. I was just like, you know, just like, break, throttle. Like that, yeah. So it's kind of not soothing, but it's fun as shit. You know?
How many gears?
That is a, what is that, 6-speed? No. I think 5, actually.
5 speeds?
I think so.
Damn.
We never got it into 5th, so that's why I don't even know.
It's a racetrack? Like a
yeah,
curb?
A real race. It's called Harris Hill. Uh-huh. So with that track and that car, I mean, the most we got it into was 4th. And you're basically in 2nd, 3rd, and 4th.
Yeah.
For most of it. That's the track there, yeah. It was fun as shit, man.
That's amazing. Was there anybody else on the track when you were doing it?
Yeah. Yeah.
So you were passing people and
other
drivers,
but everybody's doing, we weren't in a race. So everyone's just doing times.
Yeah.
Like just trying to get times. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. I spun out.
You fucking did?
Oh yeah. We have it all on video.
What's on the borders? Is it like hay?
Just fucking
metal?
Grass.
Yeah.
Just off, you know, into the grass.
Shit.
But then like, you know, he was a good coach and he helped me like, you know, really quickly, like how to recover, how to avoid that.
Right.
And so we were recovering like, right. He's like, oh, you just save that spin out, you know?
Is it a street legal car?
No.
So you just leave it at the track?
Yeah. 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 It's got a trailer and stuff. So
really?
Yeah. Yeah.
God damn.
I think I'm going to get another one.
I mean, let's forget about the car for a second and talk about podcasting because we all started out the first time I did your podcast.
Yeah.
It was at this dumpy, what was it, El Segundo? Where did you guys live?
It was a guest house in Redondo Beach. You told me you felt very sad when you were there.
It was so sad. Yeah. It felt like an old lesbian lived there.
Yeah.
I think there was, wasn't there a cat or something?
No, a dog. There was
it was a dog.
A dog
and yeah. I felt profound sadness because you guys were a couple and I felt like, what's going to happen to them?
Yeah.
You know? And now you're buying race cars with your friends.
Yeah, it's fucking crazy. Yeah, it's crazy. I know.
We did How to Be a Grown-Up for $500 an episode.
I know, dude.
Where we had to work all week and write jokes.
Yeah, True TV.
For True TV.
Yeah, and we were like, thank God this check cleared.
And we were like, this is great.
I know. It is insane how everything...
It is crazy.
Look at my fat ass right there.
Oh, yeah. Oh, you were big then.
Yeah.
Damn.
Yeah. Well, I'm living in that sad house, so like, you know what I mean? I'm just sad. There you are.
Yeah, I was looking sharp back then.
You look good, dude.
Yeah.
What is that, 2012?
Sounds about right.
Right, so that's about 10 years
ago. I'll tell you, that show was good in terms of writing because they would give you all these topics about being an adult, and it was like, they were topics that if I were to give myself a writing exercise for my own stand-up, I would say, write about what it's like to buy health insurance and what insurance means. And so I was cranking out material.
Yeah.
And I was using it in my act.
Also, I have to say, this is before I had any special come out or anything like that. I was surprised, honestly, at the number of people on the road who came up to me about that show.
Yeah.
It was happening a lot to me.
Really?
Well, I mean, like I wasn't on anything else really.
I'd
done stand up on Comedy Central a few times and a couple late night spots, but like people would come up to me and I would not know and they'd go, "Oh, I love the True TV. I love the True TV. I'm like, "Really?" Like,
yeah.
It just surprised me that it had an audience that was engaged.
Right.
For like a talking head, you know, show like that.
Yeah.
People were watching it.
Yeah.
Did it last? It was a few seasons.
Yeah, we did a few seasons.
Yeah. Yeah,
and I remember the makeup artist. She was the personal makeup artist for a celebrity. I won't say who it was.
Yes,
but she used to talk shit. She was great. She would give you some good inside
shit. She was a big lady.
Yeah,
and she would do this thing every time where I came in the studio. She'd go, "Are you hot?" And I was like, "I don't know." She goes, "Tom's hot," and I was like, and then the next day she's like, "It's hot, right?" And I'm like, "I mean, I think you're hot." And then she'd be like, "Tom's hot, crank the air." I was like, "You can just say that you're hot.
You can just say you're menopausal. It's
fine.
Yeah.
Tom's hot, everybody." Mm-hmm. I'm like, I'm fine.
Those were those crews where it would be like, the guy who had written the episode was also directing it.
Oh,
he was running a camera.
Bare bones, dude.
Yeah. Yeah, that was some run and gun shit.
Yeah, and I don't know about you, but I had like my preferred producer, like who just I felt like got it and was and then the guy who I was like, "Oh, I don't think you're as fun. I don't like you as much. I don't want to work with you."
Yeah.
But yeah, it was, I know.
Grant Taylor was the guy I liked. He was a producer on it that I used to like to work with.
I forget their names.
Yeah.
I forget. That was fun though.
He was a Boston comic when I started out, so I knew him from way back when.
That's perfect.
There was this group of guys when I was starting in Boston that worked. David Cross had this group called Cross Comedy that they used to do sketches at Catch a Rising Star on Monday nights. And it was like this crazy collection of people. And they were all broke. They were all living in like one shitty apartment in Cambridge. And it was like David Cross, Mark Maron, Louis C.K., Janine Garofalo, Jonathan Groff, who's like one of the biggest showrunners in Hollywood right now. And it was like crazy, the talent. And these guys used to put on these sketch shows that were, it kind of turned into Mr. Show.
Uh-huh.
A lot of the same guys that worked with David.
Was it before Mr. Show?
It was before. Yeah. It kind of was like, it led to some of the guys that were on it were like David Waterman and Paul Kozlowski, I think ended up working on Mr. Show as well. That was a great show.
What's that?
Mr. Show, you ever see that?
I watched the whole thing.
Yeah. And
when I got to LA, and you're just kind of, it was where I started comedy. So, I went in the Groundlings.
Yeah.
And I'm doing classes.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh,
and,
wow.
And I got, you know, I discovered or I'd seen some, but I was like, I want to study this show. And I just went and I rented every single season episode. And
yeah.
It was, I was like obsessed with it.
Yeah.
It was so funny, man.
Yeah.
And the way they would tie things together, I was like, how the fuck did they do this?
I know. It was like a little puzzle. You try to look at why did this transition into that? It was like Monty Python in that way. You know, it was like non sequitur, but then there were things that kind of streamed it together.
And they were so smart and still like so edgy and fun. Like the mix of it, you know, like was like the blend that they had was. Yeah, I so admired that show, dude.
Yeah.
So good.
And they had, Sarah Silverman did a bunch.
Yeah, they had great cast, like regulars.
Marilyn Rice Cobb.
Yes.
And then there was this one guy who turned into one of the January 6th insurrectionists.
Really?
Yeah, Jay Johnson.
Is that the big dude?
Yeah.
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 He was an insurrectionist?
Yeah. Like he thought nobody was going to recognize him.
Jesus
Christ. He's like a TV star and he's storming the Capitol.
Wow. That dude.
Yeah.
He kind of looks like he's ready for it.
Yeah.
Well, that's him right there. Jesus Christ.
Yeah.
I guess he probably doesn't like hang out with David anymore.
I think their views diverged a little bit.
Hilarious.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, it's so funny the way people got snagged on that when they would be like, it's a photo of you. They're like, you're there.
I know. You can't get away with anything anymore. I feel bad for kidnappers.
Yeah.
I mean, imagine trying to kidnap today.
Yeah.
Like every playground is like loaded with cameras and.
It sucks, dude.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like even you realize like to be like a, if you want to be like a top tier serial killer too.
Yeah.
I mean, you have to like rethink the way everything, like you're going to be followed. You're going to be tracked. There's digital, you know, trails that you leave if you use a credit card.
Yeah.
If you park somewhere, yeah. I mean, you got to be like ditching cars, wearing mm-hmm. disguises.
Yeah.
All because you're trying to, you know, seek your purpose. You know,
they say follow your dream. And yet how am I mean, how are they supposed to?
Exactly.
I mean, the mask was a gift.
Yes.
Masking became so you could at least walk around disguised.
And you could go into banks and stuff yeah. with a mask on.
Right,
the first
right.
time they could be like, they couldn't ask you to take your mask off in you're a right. bank. Now, I mean, the whole thing, if you really want to kill, you have to abandon patterns,
yep.
which is really difficult.
Right.
I mean, Israel Keyes, he would kill and he had no pattern, which was yeah. really wild.
Right.
He would kill someone in Montana and then yeah. in Maine
yeah.
and then in Arkansas yeah. and then he would kill in different manner. I mean, he was really doing something
it's
special.
It's like trying to guard LeBron.
Yeah.
You just don't know what's he going to bring.
What's he going to do?
Yeah. Yeah.
He could pull up for a three, a jump, drive it to the basket.
Yeah.
You just don't know with
yeah,
this guy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I would say like the amount of shows about serial killers and the amount that you can learn from them has really been a gift also, I think, for the serial killers. Like
yeah.
you can really do some research because you're taking the greatest minds
yeah.
in TV. They get some brilliant people
yeah.
and they are studying case histories of how to get away with a serial killer.
Yeah.
And they are putting it on the screen for you like a DIY video.
Did you watch the new Dahmer series?
No. I heard.
It's fantastic.
Yeah, I heard.
It is fantastic. That guy who's playing him is really phenomenal. I didn't know who it was, but he does an amazing job. And they, he was just so removed of emotion.
Yeah.
I moved there the year he got pinched, like the year he got arrested.
Where was that?
Milwaukee.
Uh-huh.
Then I moved there in 91.
Really?
Yeah. And then this story, I mean, I'm in the suburbs and he's uh-huh. downtown, but
yeah.
I mean, that was Evan Peters is the actor playing Jeffrey Dahmer in the new Netflix series. It's really good. And man, fucking terrifying guy.
I hear they don't use music, which makes it kind of creepier.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's a good point. I didn't think about that.
Yeah, my friend Rob Dukes sent me that. He goes, you got to watch it and notice that there's no music.
I remember this story that they show in the series, and it was highlighted a lot afterwards, which is that one time he had gotten a guy, he would spike their drink.
Uh-huh.
They would get fucking out of it, and he'd start to torture them, and then he'd eventually kill them.
Yeah.
And this guy escaped, and the police brought him back and gave him back to Dahmer.
You mean like he ran out of his house?
He ran out of his house, but he was naked or wearing underwear and he was, you know, out of it because yeah. he had been drugged.
Yeah.
And they were like, oh, this gay shit, you know,
yeah.
look at these. And he was like, we don't want to deal with these gays.
All right.
Brings him back to the apartment. He's like, is this your boyfriend? And he's like, yeah. You know,
damn.
And he's like, well, he's in the street naked and he's out of it. So he's like, take your gay shit and shut the door. We don't want to deal with this, you know,
whoa.
Brought him back. And then Dahmer killed him.
No shit.
Yeah.
That's like a Silence of the Lambs storyline.
The scariest fucking thing ever that you would be brought back.
Yeah.
By the police.
Yeah. Right.
You know, and they're like, are you going to arrest this guy? He's like, no, we're going to give him back to the guy.
Yeah.
Yeah. And he had this just bodies in his apartment. He was killing people in an apartment.
Yeah.
Not a house.
I know.
You know, and they.
It really makes you realize you're not using your space wisely.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
We have a Sub-Zero fridge, and I just feel like it's not streamlined.
No.
Yeah.
Think about what you could put in there.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, you could do like a chopping block on top of it or something.
Sure.
For the body parts and then get it right into the free. But I just. It's again, the serial killers are some of the greatest minds.
Really, really imaginative guys.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
It makes you wonder if they didn't go into that, if like the really prolific ones didn't go into killing, could they have used that mind for anything else?
Yeah.
That wasn't killing.
Right.
And what could that be? I don't know. It's like they're so good at like, you know, figuring out how to get away with something. It's like, you right. got to be good at something else too.
Well, that was cool about that movie with Christian Bale.
Mm-hmm.
What was it called? American Psycho, was it?
Oh yeah, that one?
Yeah, because he was that mindset, but he was a super successful businessman. So you saw what he could do.
It's such a good movie.
Yeah. I only saw it recently for the first time.
Really?
Like, it's really big with like the new generation. Like my kids are really into it.
Oh yeah, I think I've seen this movie like 30, 40 times.
Really?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I mean, we were obsessed with it. I think it was must have come out when I was in high school.
Uh-huh.
And it was like a routine, kind of like, you want to watch America, like over and over.
Yeah.
Yeah. Reservations at Dorsia, all that. 2000, sorry. I was in college.
Yeah.
Yeah. He's phenomenal.
Yeah.
In it. I mean, it starts off just like his routine and looking at himself. He's such a narcissist.
Yeah.
And, you know, all of it, dude. What is it? The Huey Lewis and the news, like that.
Yeah, yeah,
the way
yeah.
he breaks that down.
Yeah.
And the cards, you know, his jealousy over the guy having a better business card.
Yeah.
Like all those little details.
With the extreme close-up on the card and he's fingering it. Yeah.
Yeah.
No, it was a very well-written movie. It was like a real, you know, it was a real study.
Yeah. It is hilarious, too. It's so funny.
Right.
But he fucking, he's awesome in it.
That was me with Scarface. When I was in high school, we watched Scarface. I think every Friday night for like two years. Yeah.
And isn't that funny? Don't you think that movie actually aged?
Oh, it doesn't
cheesy?
Hold up. It doesn't hold up.
It's real cheesy, right? Like corny.
Well, because it's so fucking long.
Yeah.
It's like 3.5 hours long. And
the soundtrack is kind of like that theme song's kind of corny.
Yeah.
Doesn't have like that timeless feel to it.
No. Or what about this? The stand-up comedy in the nightclub before the shooting?
Oh, I don't
It's
even
Richard
remember.
Belzer.
Is it?
Yeah. And it's Richard Belzer up on stage doing like really bad crowd work.
He's ridiculous in it though. I mean,
yeah.
Pacino's fucking amazing.
And Michelle Pfeiffer's amazing in it also. Yeah.
Oh, there he is. He's just working the crowd.
Yeah. The bells.
The bells,
oh,
dude.
Jesus, look at him now. Damn.
Come on, man.
What a career he's had, man. He went from stand-up. Here's the thing. Like, you want that kind of role on a TV show where you're not carrying it.
Yeah.
You're just showing up. You're just like a relief pitcher. You come in, you hit some
especially
funny lines.
Especially if you're like in your 60s or 70s.
Yeah.
Like, yeah. What do I do here?
Yeah.
All right. Just come in here and tell the guy's under arrest.
All right.
Like, we got you.
And he's gone from series to series.
How old is he?
He's got to be 70 now.
He's got to be... Oh, 78.
78?
Yeah, dude.
He was the guy in New York City, like, you know, because I grew up going to the comedy clubs when I was a teenager. I'd go to Catch a Rising Star and the Improv, and like, he was the house MC at, I think it was Catch a Rising Star, and he was considered like the best comic in the city. And this is when Seinfeld was running around.
Really?
And Paul Reiser, like, there's all these like killer comedians, but the Bells was the best because that style of comedy back then was crowd work, and he was just, he had this New York cool about him.
Yeah.
And he did like stuff about race, and he was a great comic.
Wow. Damn. Yeah, he's like 80, he's 80
That's
years old,
amazing.
Basically.
Amazing.
Yeah. And he's still on TV, right?
Yeah, he's on a new series now.
Another Law and Order one?
Yeah.
Wow.
Yep.
That is the cushiest way to finish working on a TV series like that.
Yep.
Show up. Fucking six on the call sheet. You're like,
mm-hmm.
no problem. Yeah.
My buddy just got one of those. My friend Matt Malloy, he's on that new show. You've probably seen the billboards for Alaska Daily with Hillary Swank. And it's a big ABC show. It's a 1-hour drama. And my buddy just landed like a six on the call sheet kind of gig.
Oh, great.
He's up in Vancouver.
Well, I think it's crazy is that these shows come out now and you're like, who watches these shows?
Yeah, I know.
Because like the streamer stuff is so high level.
Yeah.
And everybody can either get it or can get access to a password.
And there's no commercials.
There's no commercials. And the quality of the production and the writing and the talent, yeah. you're like, fucking A. Who, you see these shows come out year after year. I'm like, who the hell is watching this? I just saw like somebody with a multicam and you're like...
A stage sitcom.
It just feels like, really feels like a jumping back in time.
Yeah, I mean, right.
When you have the options to watch things like we do now,
yeah,
it just seems crazy.
I know it's, but I still think there's room for a multi-camera to come back. I just think it has to be done right.
Yeah,
know?
It does. I mean, I'll tell you, like in my experience with Netflix, they're like, it's.
You had a deal a few years ago, right?
Well, I had one where they offered the show, and they were like, here's the offer, like, make the show. Here's the, you know, good money.
No shit.
Yeah. Like this was it was last year. And I was like, no, I don't want to do it. I turned it down. But I didn't turn it down just because it's a multicam. I mean, there's other reasons. But the whole thing with them is that I didn't realize, they told me that the most like watched shit on Netflix has been?
Right.
Friends when it was there, The Office.
Yeah.
It's like sitcoms that people have aired.
Right.
That are just super popular. And so that's why they're like, this is obviously something people will get into.
Right.
If it's the right one.
Yeah.
So they're willing to make them, you know?
So they're willing to make them on the network with the hope that they get a second life on a streamer.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
And the streamer is saying like, if we make it here and it's a hit, we're golden.
Yeah.
You know, because we'll just keep making that. We want a 6-7 series run of a multicam that people love.
Yeah.
You know, because they have that problem with they have these huge, you know, production, big set piece, single cam shows. And then what'll happen is if it's not a monster hit, you know, they always get they're in the trades and everything for canceling.
Yeah.
But they're like, yeah, I mean, this shit costs fucking $8 million an episode and it's not a hit. Why are we going to keep making it?
Right.
They're always waiting for like the Orange is the New Black, House of Cards, you know, Mindhunter, the show that everyone is talking about and watching.
Right.
Those are hard to, you don't get those every year.
No.
You know, like the, what's it called? A Game of Thrones is like, that's a special thing that happens.
Yeah.
So they're always trying to make that happen, but it fucking costs a fortune. Stranger Things? Holy shit.
Yeah.
They're spending $30 million an episode on that.
I know. Well, the new Hobbit movie, Hobbit, what do you call it? Lord of the Rings.
Yeah, yeah.
That's apparently the most expensive show ever made.
Really?
Yeah, I can't remember what the numbers are, but it's crazy what they're spending.
And it's Peter Jackson obviously doing it or no?
He's got to be producing it. I don't know. I didn't see it. I heard it's
good. Oh my God.
$715 million for eight episodes.
Bro,
so
that's way
almost
more.
Almost $100 million an episode. Whoa.
That is way more than anything I've ever, like that is so much more.
It's the most expensive show ever made.
Fuck, imagine the catering.
Yeah, well, that's the thing.
Set.
I mean, I've written on shows for 20 years, and when you're writing on a good network show, there is no better life.
Yeah.
I mean, it's long hours, but it's like you show up to set, and there's somebody coming around with freshly baked muffins.
Look at this.
House of Dragon is $20 million an episode. Dude, that show is dull. Have you watched it?
No.
It is so dull.
I stopped Game of Thrones season 3.
Did you really?
Yeah.
Damn.
I don't know. I lost interest.
Wow.
It's hard. I mean, I feel like if you're not in the, like, oh my God, hooked, and there's so, we have so many options.
Yeah.
And our lives are busy.
Yeah, yeah.
It's like, I can fall out really easy.
I know. My wife gets mad at me because I fell out of a series, The Old Man with Jeff Bridges. I watched 7 out of the 8 episodes, and then I said, I'm done. And she was fucking yelling at me.
You watched 7 out of 8?
I was like, it just went off the rails. You lost it.
I'll watch, there is a series called Big Fat Black Tits, and I have seen every single episode. It's
You've
phenomenal.
You've seen the first 12 minutes
of
every
I'll give
episode.
I'll give you a password. It's really good.
How do they end? Have you
seen
the endings?
I've never seen an ending. I always tap out, but... It's right in your wheelhouse.
Yeah.
Yeah. You'll like it.
I wish they could make it in 3D. I'd wear the goggles. That's something you want your wife to walk in on.
What are you doing? You got to put the goggles on. You will get it if you want. I had to try it with the Oculus. Have you seen, you know, that's supposed to be incredible.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I haven't done that yet.
Yeah, man. Exciting stuff.
Yeah.
Technology, man. It's so exciting.
I'm so far behind it all.
Is that Lord of the Rings thing out or that's coming out?
I think it's out.
It's out?
Yeah.
$715 million budget?
Yeah. I mean, it makes you have to like it that much more because you're resenting how much they spent.
It's out.
It. Yeah.
Man.
Like when I know a show's that expensive, I've got a chip on my shoulder when I'm watching it.
Yeah, sure.
Yeah.
I mean, Jeff Bezos had to sell a brick for that one, right?
Yeah, that's right.
Fucking, that is incredible.
Yeah.
Now I'm going to go watch that.
I have to.
Just to see.
Yeah.
And I better be blown the fuck away.
I would say
how is that the budget?
Well, I think they saved money on How to Be a Grown-Up. They took the...
but I mean, what are they doing in this show where it's that? I mean, it's like, how?
Just extras. Dude, when I've written on a couple HBO shows, HBO spends money.
Yeah.
Like when we did Crashing, we had a scene where John Mulaney was playing. We needed John Mulaney to do stand-up.
Yeah.
And so they rented Town Hall, which is 1,500 seats, filled it with extras for like a 30-second shot of John Mulaney doing stand-up.
Wow.
Yeah. And then I heard about, there was a great series called Boardwalk Empire that had Steve Buscemi in it. And they were shooting, and I did my 1 hour. You ever do the Tarrytown Music Hall?
Yes.
Tarrytown Music Hall is where I did my 1 hour special. And they had, they redressed it for Boardwalk Empire because they were shooting, again, like a 40-second clip of the theater.
Yeah.
They reupholstered
the whole thing,
everything in like what would have been vintage material, the curtains, the lighting. They had to buy specific lights and replace all the lights. It was crazy.
You got to respect that.
Yeah.
That's incredible.
Dude, that was a good series. Boardwalk Empire.
What's up with that dude's face?
He was in World War I and he got blown apart.
Jesus.
Yeah. And he was, he's a sniper. He's a killer.
Is that makeup though, or is his face really like that?
In real life?
Yeah.
No, I think it's makeup.
Okay, good.
Do you think that's how they're doing the casting now? Nowadays.
Is your face fucked up?
I wouldn't be surprised because you have to be gay to play a gay character.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, even fucking the Asians get mad when a white guy plays them. They're out
of
control, man.
Right.
Yeah. That's a big
one.
And
when they get mad, they get mad.
They get mad.
Yeah.
Yeah.
They like to chat online.
Oh,
and,
yeah.
Yeah.
They have all the computer skills. They know what they're doing.
Remember when they used to be quiet?
Yeah.
Yeah.
How we liked them?
Yep. Things have changed. Technology. It's technology.
God damn it. Yeah. I remember when it was just, you know, nice being white. You know
what I mean? It was so good. We had it so good for so long.
It really was up until 15 years. That's when the shift started, right?
2015?
Like, or maybe no, the shift started 2005.
17.
Oh, really? You think so?
I mean, in terms of not working.
Yeah.
Like, I think it's really only the last like 4 years.
Yeah.
Where really like you're seeing diversity, which look, you know, it was time.
Yeah.
I was in a lot of all white male writing rooms for over a lot of years.
Yeah.
It's time for some diversity, but it's also time.
But not on camera.
Right.
Like, I just want to see, I like a diverse writing room, but I still want to see who I want to see. You know what I mean?
Other than the fat black tits.
Yeah. I mean,
everything should be white except for the two fat black tits.
That's all I'm saying. Yeah. Is that a lot? Is that not inclusive? I don't know, man. I mean, whatever. I can't even share my opinions anymore.
Right, right.
Yeah. So tough.
Yeah.
So it's tough out here.
It's hard.
Yeah, but writer's room have changed for sure, right? Like those.
Oh, yeah.
And that is better. It's better.
Well, I know on Big Mouth, they had a character on the show who was, one parent was black and one parent was Jewish. Mm-hmm. And the woman that was doing the character was Jewish, but she wasn't black. and she stepped down and apologized for social, what do you call it?
Appropriating or like, I don't know. Right?
Appropriation.
Right.
Yeah, she stepped down and they brought
Jenny
in
Slate, I think. Yeah,
and they brought in a black actress.
She said playing a half black is a white woman is an act of erasure of black people. Whew. Yeah.
But she's Jewish.
She is Jewish, and the character is half Jewish.
Yeah.
Well, kudos to her. I wouldn't have stepped down.
Fuck I've
been,
no.
Been like, I'll take this fucking check.
Yeah.
Come take it from me, you half black motherfucker. I mean, here's the thing too about, I get it. You want to have voice work go to a wide net, but what if like whoever is not, you know, what if an Asian woman does this black voice really well and kills it. And
right.
You're like, yeah, but it's a voice on like, she shouldn't be able to do that.
Right.
I don't know. I just feel like voice work is, it's a skill set. I mean, like, you know, there's people who are just, like, they can do amazing things with their voices.
Right, right, right.
And I don't know. I just always feel like whoever has the funniest, best voice for that should get the part.
Well, there was that girl, Angela Johnson, you know, that comic Angela Johnson?
Yeah.
Like, she does a Korean woman's voice, and she got huge from it.
I remember that, the nail salon.
Yeah.
Yeah, Vietnamese.
Yeah. But what's her ethnicity?
She's Mexican.
So I think she got a pass because she is a minority, so she could do another minority.
In the last few years, she did get... She did get a lot of pushback from that. Yeah. And then there's Gabriel, you know, Fluffy.
Yeah.
He can do crazy voices. He gets cast as all kinds of shit.
Oh, really?
A kid, a woman. Yeah, he gets...
Oh, no shit.
I mean, he's just got this incredible ability to do things with his voice. And it was, you know, he's a Mexican dude and...
Yep.
He can... I don't think he only plays Mexican parts.
Right.
I mean, Bart Simpson is... famously voiced by a white woman.
Right.
I guess that's not really an issue. But then Hank Azaria used to voice Apu and like 12 other voices there, but he stopped doing Apu.
He did.
Yeah.
Yeah.
There was a big pushback on, like there was a big movement, I guess, to get him to stop doing it. I don't know.
Maybe in drama, but in comedy?
I feel like in cartoons especially, it seems, you know, I don't know.
Voiceover work is good fucking work, though.
It's another one,
That guy, Billy West, you know, Billy West, he was a Howard Stern guy forever, and then he got into doing cartoon voices, and now he's like the guy.
Really?
See him in everything. Like, what's the one?
I've wanted to do it. I've auditioned for a number of things.
Yeah.
I've never gotten voice
work. You got a good voice.
Never happened.
Really?
Yeah. That's the guy?
Billy West. Yeah.
All right. Is it an American? Yeah, it is. But sometimes when you see the guys like him and they do an interview, immediately you're like, holy shit, that voice, like their natural speaking voice.
Yeah.
It registers right away.
This
is not a normal voice.
Yeah.
There's that guy. Who's the one who does, have you seen, he's a white dude who does Morgan Freeman. He's a comedian.
No.
I always forget his name. God damn it. What is his name?
That's a tough one to do. That's a low range voice to get to.
Bro, do you know he's done it for Morgan Freeman on camera?
No shit.
And Morgan Freeman's like, holy shit. Like, it is remarkable.
I think I heard he's retiring.
Morgan
Josh
is?
Robert Thompson?
Yes, that's him. Yeah. He is unreal.
Really?
That voice. Here, do you want to listen to it real quick?
Yeah.
Put those headphones on. I mean, he is like, it makes no sense that he can do this.
Morgan Freeman is probably the greatest voice of all time, but what a lot of people don't know is that I do the voice of Morgan Freeman for Morgan Freeman. You know, it's kind of a Wizard of Oz situation. You know, pay no attention to the skinny white boy behind the curtain, you know. So now when you're hearing Morgan Freeman, and it may help for you to close your eyes at this point because it's going to be a little disconcerting. To hear that sound coming out of my pocket.
But
when you hear Morgan Freeman, what you're really hearing is me. And it's a fun voice to do because I like to go around and, I narrate people's lives. You know, that's a fun game that I like to play. I might narrate things like, well, Jimmy got up in the morning and brushed his teeth and
took a shit and those kind of things. But in your case, I might say something like, two little bears, Bert and Tom, went inside the cave. Two bears in one cave. They stayed inside that cave for, over 6 months.
It's uncanny.
Now, most folks
That's
in town
crazy.
Just assume.
Yeah.
But it's wrong.
It's super wrong. And I got to tell you, I'm disappointed in Josh for doing that.
Yeah. It is. You do have to close your eyes.
You do. Yeah.
To fully appreciate it. That's insane. Well, you know, my dad did voiceovers for a living. He was a radio guy.
I remember he was a radio guy.
And then he did, he did straight voiceovers, but like for commercials. And he went in and he was the voice of Showtime for like a decade.
Really?
He's like, coming up next on Showtime. And he would go in for like 3 or 4 hours on a Thursday and he would record them for the whole week. And I mean, that shit got all of us through college.
Really?
It was like huge money.
Huge money, yeah.
And then he would do like Charmin, National Enquirer, Uncle Ben's Rice. Like he had,
oh my God.
Back when voiceovers like used to get a campaign for like 10 years.
That's amazing.
And nowadays you do one
shot. You hear
the,
you know, sometimes recognizable voices, actors on commercials sometimes, and you're like, oh my God, they backed up a truck of money. But it'll be just like built Ford Tough. And you're like,
that's it.
And you're like, is that Kiefer Sutherland?
Yeah.
That's it. Like,
I know. It kind of sucks. I really think if you're a big celebrity and you're making $5 million a movie, don't take money out of the mouth of the guy that's a voice. I mean, I say that because that's what my father did maybe, but it does seem like celebrities are getting fucking greedy.
Yeah, of course.
They've all got to have a podcast and a TV commercial.
The guys that got into podcasting that were already like super huge and then their name got them this incredible offer to podcast. You listen to their podcast and you're like, these are just like marginal podcasters.
Right.
But they have huge draw power. You know?
Yeah. Yeah. And then it feeds on itself.
Of course.
Because people in our society are so drawn to celebrity.
Celebrity. It just fascinates people.
Yeah.
I've had so many people point out a few of these podcasts that are celebrity hosted. And I'm like, dude, that podcast is dog shit.
Yeah.
And they're like, really? I'm like, let me point you at a few other ones about like where like there's really good hosts and like, but they just don't care because they're like, yeah, but it's this guy.
Yeah.
I'm like, yeah, he sucks at this.
I know. It's not what he does.
Yeah.
Sam Tripoli does this.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, man. Like they're like, and then like the press, because you realize the longer you do this, how everything's intertwined, and there'll be like, you know, so and so is putting a new stamp on podcasting or redefining the medium. And you're like, what?
Right, right.
This is just some guy who called up his, you know, other actor friend, and they just sit there and, I mean, it's not like we're doing anything different, but the idea that because it's a celebrity doing it, that like now it's better.
Yeah,
it's like it's not better.
Well, it's become something that was done in somebody's guest house with a microphone or recorder into, I just did a celebrities podcast and it was like, I couldn't even get in the building with security.
Yeah.
Like I had to fill out all these forms and then I got upstairs and there was three different producers and there was like there was a creative executive and there was a writer and I was just like, dude, and then it was just.
Most actors too, they're just awful.
Yeah.
They just suck.
Yeah.
They suck to hang out with. They suck to talk to.
Right.
They suck to spend time with. They're just shitty at conversation. Like,
they're just false positive.
Yeah, they really are.
Yeah.
They're fucking AIDS, dude.
Right.
They're just, the worst. They're the worst. They're the worst.
Yeah.
And then you realize how fucking vacant they are
when
you hang out with comics, because comics have like thoughts that they, you know, and opinions, and you hang out with these dipshits who just fucking look at you and you're like, yeah, if someone doesn't write it down for you, you don't have a fucking thing
to
say.
Right, right, right.
Go stand in traffic.
They're so safe. Everything they say is safe.
Yeah, you make a joke and they're like, oh my God, I might not get work again. You know? And you're like, that's your choice, fuckface.
I know.
You shouldn't have gotten into this.
You know? Act. What is acting anyway?
Oh, go play pretend, you cunt.
Yeah.
What a skill set.
Yeah, what are you, 7?
Yeah.
You're going to pretend?
My kids are actors too.
I get embarrassed sometimes when I see adults acting and they get like, there was a birthing scene in a show I just saw. And I was like, that poor woman, look at her pretending she's having a baby. She looks ridiculous.
Ridiculous. The only ones you want to watch really act are like the Christian Bales, like the people who are so goddamn talented
yeah.
and so committed where you're like, all right, this person goes all in. Anybody right. below that tier, you're like, this is right. fucking embarrassing.
Yeah. It's like, what's the guy who did Lincoln? Who's the guy who played Lincoln?
Oh, right. Daniel Day-Lewis.
Daniel Day-Lewis. That I'll guy. See that guy do anything.
Anything.
Yeah.
Yeah, he's out of his fucking mind. He left acting to become a fucking like shoe cobbler or whatever. Yeah. And he's like, I'm going to make shoes.
I know.
Like, okay.
I know.
He really commits.
He fucking, he's incredible.
He stays in character during the yeah. filming.
Right.
So like during Lincoln, he stays in that walking out of his trailer with air conditioning.
Yeah.
You know, they're like, President Lincoln. You need it on set. And you go, okay. It doesn't break at all.
That was a good link when you just said, okay, yeah.
Well, I'm an actor. I'm a very talented actor. All right, we're going to wrap it up. Are you coming out on the road this October anywhere? Are you going to be
Yeah, I got dates coming up. I'll be in New Orleans and Lafayette, Louisiana, Ooh. And then Chicago, October 15th at the Den Theater. My son will be there. He goes to college in Chicago. That'll be fun.
You got grown-up kids now.
Yeah. San Francisco Punchline, Fort Worth, Texas. All over the place.
You're gigging.
Fitzdog.com for tickets.
Fitzdog.com for tickets. Also, you do podcasts that are...
Fitzdog Radio yeah. comes out on Tuesdays. I interview guests like yourself. You've been yeah. on many times.
And you do the Sunday...
And then Sunday Papers with Mike Gibbons, and then Childish with Allison Rosen. Those are my three podcasts.
Damn.
Yeah, man. You got to hustle.
You got to hustle. Yeah. Go get tickets. Go see Greg. Truly one of the best comics working today. And thanks for coming. Thanks for hanging out.
Thanks, dude. Man. Great right. being here.
We'll see you next time.
Bert and Tom, Tom and Bert. One goes topless while the other wears a shirt. Tom tells stories and Bert's the machine. There's not a chance in hell that they'll keep it clean. Here's what we call Two Bears, One Cave. No scripts, a bit of booze, amateur partology. Dirty jokes, raunchy humor, no apologies. Here's what we call Two Bears, One Cave.